been looking at the news, and that you found something about skidoos.
Yeah, we're up in Labrador there. They did a clip on YouTube and some of the news, and couple of the dog sleds and the snowmobiles went through the ice, which is totally insane for this time of year for Labrador. It's just one of those factors that global warming is happening. And actually, there was an article in the paper also in Quebec where there are ice racing. There's some stock car ice racing, and two cars went through the ice. See these guys scrambling out of their car on top of the roof and jumping into the ice. So Eric, why is this happening so early in the year? I mean, that ice should be frozen.
Well, let's first talk about the cane race. Hey, the cane race, something like 2,000 kilometers of skidooing, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
it's. And I know you're an avid skidooist, right?
Huh? I usually run into trees and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's
well, good fun. I heard it's the first time that they had to cancel the race.
Wow, that is truly amazing.
Yeah. I work with somebody that grew up in Labrador. A First Nation person, and he left a long time ago, and he works at our test center, and he said, yeah, it's the first time in history that they can recall that they canceled the race, and literally they had started the race, and then exactly that, there was ice openings, and it was too dangerous to continue. So it was canceled on the way up. So your question is, why is it happening?
Well, we know that Labrador is a very, very sensitive part of the earth. It's very...
Why is it sensitive? Because it used to belong to Quebec?
They gave it away. No, I mean, the ego is so...
Sorry. It was an inside joke. Sorry. I apologize.
Okay.
But it's a land of beauty. I'd love to go up.
Oh, yeah. It's supposed to be fantastic, but it's so volatile to different parts of the climate, and to the eco has been there for such a long time. Anything disturbs it really quickly.
Yeah. Well, what it is that the north is like the canary in the coal mine. What does that mean?
Well, it's a warning sign. Canaries, when the canary in the coal mine dies, you get out really quick.
So what happens is the north and the south warm up more than around the equator. So when we say that we've reached 0.9 degrees Celsius increase in temperatures due to climate change, how much more do you think we get in the north versus the equator?
Ooh, that's a good question. And 3 degrees more?
Oh, wow!
Yeah, I saw 3 fingers. But one question. The southern hemisphere doesn't seem to be warming up as fast as the northern hemisphere.
Yes.
Why?
Well, now you're asking many questions. Let's do the north first.
Okay, Doc. Okay?
And this is why... climate change and anything that has to do with the energy transition is so hard, because you can't just isolate one thing. Okay. So for the longest time, I had deduced by myself without checking my facts that it was getting warmer up north because we live on a ball and the sun differentially heats the equator more than the north. And as you go, think about the rings of the latitudes, they get smaller and smaller and smaller.
Right.
So imagine if there was a natural convection of heat and cold, and the cold mass going from the equator, going from the North Pole.
Goes down.
And you know what happens in Winnipeg sometimes? We get so cold in the winter. There's a cold mass that says, well, I'm heavy, and I'm going to either go towards Russia or I'm going to go to Canada.
So we get it in Canada.
So sometimes we get it, sometimes Russia gets it. So my observation, without reading, was we were getting hotter up north more because we have more CO2 in around the equator. The earth has to get a new equilibrium temperature because it can't sweat the heat as much, so it needs to increase its temperature of the surface. And what happens is that as the cold air comes in, hot air goes up, but the exchange is a lot more because you get less landmass.
Yes.
So I always thought it was because of that, but I went and did some search on the internet, and everybody was saying, no, it's due to the fact that our reflective index, the snow is melting.
Absorbing and, more, yeah. And
what's called the albedo, okay, is how much you reflect so that the energy from the sun will come in and will just bounce and not have any effect. So about 30%. You're going to remember that, eh? Albedo is 30%.
But so, just the so one.
I never bought that argument, by the way.
Okay, but
you know why?
Why?
Because the temperature difference is more in winter when there's less sun and no sun. So I'm like, I don't buy this stuff. Okay, so I went in and chased, and NASA did a study. I can't stand it when they say like NASA. It's like it's not any better if NASA did it. Okay, NASA can't build a rocket to get out of the Earth. Okay, even no matter how much money they have. So I don't care about NASA. Okay? I prefer a good research group, and I don't care if they come from Russia or they come from Iceland or they come from anywhere. Okay. So anyway, they said that it was, yes, convection. They didn't talk about the decrease of land mass as you go up, but it was a short article. So let's conclude that there's multiple factors.
Yeah, there are.
Multiple factors. Yep. And why in the South Pole less? I've always asked myself that question. You know the big difference between the South Pole and the North Pole?
We've got more land mass than the North Pole.
The South Pole has no land.
It's all ice.
It's all ice.
Well, actually, there is land under there.
Well, far below.
It's miles below. Well,
if you actually have like land in the Arctic,
right?
But downwards below would be the convection currents.
Okay,
different convection currents. But you know when we talked about our friend from Ottawa there,
right?
On climate change, who was a meteorologist,
right?
He said no. The ice caps on both ends have a huge dynamics on weather, right?
Yes.
So anyway, the canary in the gold mine is it's getting warmer up north.
Right.
But we sort of know that because whenever you have a chance to go up north, you talk to people from there and they always tell you the big change, right?
Yeah. Matter of fact, one of our guests coming up in another series, he does satellite imaging for ice all over the world.
Okay.
And he'll be really interested to have this conversation with him also. There's another factor that we don't account for a lot of times. The Earth wobbles on a 22-year cycle from one side to the North Pole, goes 22 years from one side to the other. I guess you didn't look up where we are on the wobble that's closest to the sun right now or farthest from the sun.
Well, there are more than the one wobble. First of all, it wobbles within a year.
No, it's 22 years back to back.
No, but there's many cycles.
Okay. No, I'm an astronomer. I know it's 22 years
back. I know, but you're talking about one cycle. I predict solar energy. So what happens is that there's all these equations of correction.
Yes.
They're not just that wobble. There's other ones, right? Yep. So where the moon is and stuff. So what happens is it doesn't take long that you need to spend a long time to understand that.
Definitely.
And what we're going to come back more and more is with Dr. Renewable, I have to go back and hit a lot of the popular books, which I wasn't reading. I was developing technology.
Instead of reading, okay.
Okay. And you know what? It's easy to take one point, especially on the internet, without and taking it out of context or not putting other items on it.
Yeah.
Okay. So you really have to dig, and dig.
And to that point, a lot of people that criticize climate change or different things do usually take one point and disregard the rest. As a psychological factor, you have to deep dive into it. You have to do some critical thinking on it. And a lot of people just, this is a good article. I'll spout that, good or bad, too.
Can you repeat that, Robert? Because
no, I can't for a moment.
That's exactly what I find.
Yeah.
And then what happens is, remember I told you that I didn't want to pick on Jordan, but
yep.
Jordan was one of them. They pick on those articles and they amplify it.
Exactly.
And the thing is, I go back to what I always say, you don't invite non-heart surgeon to discuss heart surgery.
Exactly.
In this environment, partly because it affects us all, okay? But everybody has a say as an input. And again, I'm not a climate person, okay? I'm dangerously not knowledgeable, okay? But I do have a science background, right, and I look at multiple sources. So, for example, I'm reading a book right now, and all his comments are good, but they're not critical thinking, and they only come from one location.
Yes.
So if one location is basically going to show that climate change is over-exaggerated, which it is, I agree with this, okay, in terms of effect, but you can't just take one reference and one common group of scientists. You got to go across the earth, because scientists are bias. There's no question. So you just got to go look at all the academics that did hydrogen fuel cells for vehicles. Okay. It shook me to my core. Yep. And I got physically ill to my stomach when I saw how degrading we can approach science. Because we start off idealistic, right? Oh, yeah, you know, it's like science, you know, objective, blah, 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 the scientific method. But there's nothing. That is farther than the truth. Okay, everybody has biases. I grew up in my first application of science, which I found that I was all wrong. Okay, in two-phase flow, and I went and dug in.
Yep.
And I had the courage or the arrogance,
whatever. But you know, Eric,
to say no and find something else.
It doesn't matter what you do. I mean, we do renewable energy here. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's just not solar panels. Mm-hmm. It's a combination of all types of renewable energy yes. that makes this up. So when you're doing a thing on the weather, let's say, it's just not one factor. It's a whole, it's a very large litany of factors. So the people that go in and say, okay, well, you know, solar panels can't feed the world, but where it's enough energy, but it's a combination of everything. So it's the same way with the climate change and the ice flows and everything else. It's a combination of a lot of different effects. It even goes down to government. You know, they got the liberals and the conservatives. You know, it's a combination of them both ideas. Both have to mirror their thoughts together for the better of the country, instead of saying, oh no, mine is right and we're going to disregard yours. And of course, that's one of the biggest problems we have with government, especially in the U.S. where there's only a two-party system. But it goes to everything. It goes from government to religion to thought to climate change to science. The critical thinking is so important to take the other point of view and meld it together.
Well, the critical thinking is something we're always going to be talking about. I hope ChatGPT and these AI programs will have a special version for critical thinking. Ooh. That is able to show the balance. Actually, I found a website that actually shows, let's say, a news, let's say, on the cane race,
right?
And then they'll show like let's say 15 news channels that picked it up, and then they'll show how many were conservative, how many were too liberal, and
right.
how many were unbiased,
right?
So then you see the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool. Technology is coming out like that, so that you'll be able to weed out those that are opportunistic. One thing I found out.
I wonder where public radio and public TV come in. I wonder if they're right in the center.
Oh, public radio is uncensored, ungoverned, and
critically thought.
Like us on the air, which is like should never happen.
I know. Talking about critical thinking. Somebody blew it there.
But you're still like accepting emails, right? And you're responding to the emails. Have you figured out the emails to send you?
No. It's dr@umfm.com.
But one thing that is we need to remind, and that's why I was programming the road sound system at 3 o'clock in the morning yesterday, was that people write books and people talk, but they forget that, yes, humans can adapt, but who cannot adapt?
Well, humans have to adapt. They did adapt.
But who cannot adapt as well as humans in a fast time?
Oh, the Earth. But, you know, it's the Earth is always going to be here. We probably won't, but the Earth will always be here.
Here's our friends. Okay. And they're telling and they're reminding people that we're affecting the CO2 very rapidly.
Yes.
Nature is able to adapt over long time frame. But our friends, the whales here, are just reminding us that when humans say we can adapt and throw money at it, okay, the whales are just reminding that, you know, they can adapt too, but plants, animals, mammals, yep, they'll adapt. But this is the fastest injection of CO2 in the history of mankind. Possibly it was beaten by the asteroid.
Yeah, that might be the fastest.
Yeah. Was pretty fast, but we weren't there, right?
That's well, I don't know. Did we adapt? Who knows?
So yes, we could talk about adaptation.
Well, actually, Eric, you know, I think back when the asteroids hit, Homo sapiens, apparently there was a multitude of different types of humans out there. Oh yeah, there was. They know of 6 or 12 right now, but they suspect there was probably in excess of 20 variations of the human being. Homo sapiens just happened to come out on top.
So right now we're only one species?
You were only one species, yeah. But we're mixed in with the Neanderthals also. There's a little Neanderthal blood in you. Okay. Not me. I'm good. So, but apparently they suspect there's up to 20 different variations of humans back then, and we're the ones that survived through adaptation.
So anyway, maybe next year the cane race will be ongoing, and I would say that as a skier, I've been monitoring what's happening to, for example, Whistler.
Yes.
And what's happening in terms of how heavy the snow is going and the skiing season, and how do the companies are predicting long term their operation in areas that are coastal.
Yeah. And there's different types of snow. You know, years ago when I skied in Whistler, it was light powder, very fluffy snow. Mm-hmm. Now it's getting to very heavy snow, very sticky snow, which is a really hard thing to ski on.
Well, I'm a much better skier than why, Robert?
Why? You're younger?
No, because you gave me your good skis.
Now, yeah. Exactly.
So I throw away my old skis and out. Well, the wood,
the wood skis were about time you got rid of them.
Yeah, well, you know, recycling, repurposing. Right?
I think you burnt them.
So I'm a much better skier, but you're right. It is long term what's going to happen to the ski hills and the impact on that. So anyway, we have a good show. Oh, we always have a good show.
Oh, we always have a good show. Yeah,
we have fun, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and we do give out snippets of information.
Oh, look at that! I made an error.
He's getting used to pushing buttons. Yeah. You know,
my dad was a sound engineer, and I think I have a lot to live up to him. Right.
There we go.
I'm stuck on the animal sound. I've got a forest. I've got whales. I've got birds. It's always to remember that human beings, Homo sapiens, are just one of a million species on Earth.
Yep.
And when we talk about adaptation, it's very nice. And you know what we're going to come up with also?
No, tell me.
The adaptation cost is going to be more than doing renewables.
And
I programmed something else, Robert.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Whenever you want to give an award, this is the Apartheid Against Renewables Award. So whenever it's called the AARA.
Okay.
The Apartheid Against Renewables Award. So then this is the award. So whenever we come across a news and the apartheid is really obvious.
There we go.
Okay. This is the award. I could give an award. You could give an award. And
this I could get an award. This is just for being here, I should get an award.
So if ever we deserve an Apartheid Against Renewables award, just send us an email.
Uh-huh.
And especially if we discriminate against renewables, efficiency, and demand. These are the three tools that we have to live from recent sunlight. And this show is not just about trying to address climate change. It's really saying that the Earth is designed to be run on renewables.
Yes.
Okay. We've got 5,000 times more energy than we need that comes on the surface of the Earth, 10,000 times more at the level of the atmosphere. And running on renewables is going to cost, but I still haven't seen one person, Robert, and this is sad.
No, it's, you know, I don't think it's going to cost. It's a matter of adaptation. I mean, there's more jobs and opportunities in renewable energy than there is in the oil and gas industry right now.
Yes,
there's huge
let me say something, Robert.
Can I stop you?
No.
Okay.
any equipment has to be renewed after 30, 40, 50 years. So when we have a GDP of 95 trillion per year on Earth, let's say 100 yep. trillion, okay, we're going to be spending, let's say 1 trillion anyways, 1% at least on fixing our energy supply or energy system, fossil fuels, upgrading it and yep. expanding it. So what we're doing is we tend to forget it's a differential cost. And the cost, let's go look at electric cars. And this is a good education, because electric cars will cost significantly less than gasoline car, mm-hmm. and their cost to operate is going to be much less. So here we have a situation that we could move forward and less costly, 100% from renewable energy, and people have complained that this is going to be a huge cost. What it is, it's a displacement, and yes, there'll be less job. Why? Because it's more efficient, it's better, and there's less humans to part of the chain of doing this. Oh, Robert, what do I hear here?
I think it's Street Talk, Eric.
Oh, yes, and what do we do on Street Talk?
We interview the average person on the street, just random people. As you say, we want to hear the pulse of the nation, what they're thinking. And we're quite surprised at some of the answers, and some of the answers are quite enlightening.
Okay, so thank you for participating in Dr. Renewal and the segment Street Talk, where we talk randomly to people off the street. In terms of your understanding of climate change, where are you at in terms of your understanding of it and what's causing it?
Well, my understanding in regards to the climate change would be us as a society not participating enough in renewables, and we have to have more understanding of the value of the renewables being part of the climate change due to the fact of us using an oil as a main source of energy. So the oil could be some of the alternative source of energy, but in my personal opinion, we should be changing it to more of an alternative energy approach versus an oil-based approach.
So in your understanding of climate change, do you think that we're putting a lot of emphasis that we're going to continue business as usual, but we're going to somehow magically sequester this CO2? Or do you think that's a pipe dream and we should be more serious about renewables?
In my opinion, we should be more serious in regards to renewables.
How much do you think we're actually sequestering from coal plants and natural gas plants right now? So the idea came out like more than 20 years ago that we would, that the oil companies would sequester. That means put the CO2 back in the earth. The idea is you take the carbon out of the earth and then you put the CO2 back in the earth, which sounds expensive and complicated. Do you track how many people actually, how many companies actually do this?
No, I don't.
How many plants do you think are doing it right now on planet Earth? I'm talking about sequestering, not capturing it and then selling to make a profit, but in terms of this idea that we could go in with fossil fuels, not do renewable energy, and move forward with a capturing approach.
I would think it's just still as an idea.
Yeah, just an idea. So you don't even think there's one plant?
No, I don't think so.
I think there's two plants. And I know one plant wants $50 million a year of taxpayers' money to sequester. And so
two plants out of how many?
Out of how many? Oh, fudge. I don't know. That's a hard question. But let's just talk about sequestering, capturing this and putting back in the plant, in the soil. What do you think happens if you're not base loaded? Like if you have a big power plant and have you seen big power plants?
Yes, I did.
So imagine a big power plant. Like this is not like starting a car and shutting off a car. So if you're modulating a big plant, And the idea that you could go and sequester 100% when you're not base loaded, can you imagine this happening? The complexity of doing it.
No, I don't.
Yeah? Come on, give me an idea. Give me a concept where you could go in and on a base plan. How long does it take to start a coal plant, you think? From the full shutdown up to fully operational at temperature?
I think it might take at least a month.
A month?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, you're more conservative than me. I would think about a week to get to thermal
condition. I don't think so. You think
it's a month?
Yeah. Oh, shit. It will take longer to get it fully operational, back fully operational from a complete shutdown.
So from a shutdown to like bring back is your top of weeks. And the idea that as you modulate with the load, the idea that you could sequester and just turn it on a dime is pretty hard to imagine, right?
Yeah. It's almost next to impossible in my opinion.
Next to impossible. Okay. So in terms of your household, like what's your household doing to address locally at your household level climate change?
We did change the behavior a while ago.
Yeah.
We're looking into more recycling, we're looking into more basic food source, we're looking more into saving energy, we're looking into more being efficient with our energy savings. Mm-hmm. And also we evaluating on switching to electric vehicle.